Ciao ragazzi, sono Alessio di Social Media Hacks Italia e questo è il podcast. Let's roll!
Welcome to Social Media Hacks Italia, hosted by Enrico Lugnan and Alessio Cordeddu.
Ciao a tutti e benvenuti ad un altro episodio delle Interview X. Anche quest'oggi abbiamo un ospite estero e chiudiamo il tridente magico delle Facebook Ads. Oggi qui con noi c'è John Loomer, uno dei maggiori esperti di Facebook Ads, una delle persone che seguo da più tempo online per i contenuti che condivide, per tutte le preziose bombe che droppa a livello settimanale. Da adesso l'intervista sarà in inglese, quindi pronti, appunti e ascoltate bene. Hey John, first of all, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for being on Social Media Hacks Italian, accepting this interview. I guess everyone actually knows you, but as usual, please, there might be some few people that don't know who you are. If you are so kind to introduce yourself and let us know what you've been up to in the last few years.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Enrico, and hi, everybody. I've been doing this about 8 years ago. I was laid off for the second time, and the second time about 2.5 years. And I decided at that point that I wasn't going to work for someone else again. It took some time, but eventually built a business, and a big part of building that business. And I didn't know what I was going to do at the time, by the way, I had no clue. But one thing I knew about was Facebook marketing and Facebook advertising. And so I just started writing about it. And that actually was one of the topics that was getting the most traction. So I said, okay, this, you know, about 6 months later, this is me what I focus on. So I've been doing it for, about 8 years now. So it's johnloomer.com, John Loomer Digital on Facebook. And really, you know, after about the third, fourth, fifth year, you know, I really started getting into my groove as far as, you know, what's the business model. All this stuff I had to learn on the go. So my primary focus has been really advanced Facebook advertising. So my target market for the most part has been, you know, agencies and people who spend, you know, more than a couple thousand dollars a month typically in Facebook ads. But it's been a really fun ride, and it's kind of amazing the way it all came about.
It's amazing because I remember stumbling upon one of your posts, I think 4 years ago. I was just starting out. Mm-hmm. I quit my job. I didn't really like the I was working in insurance sales. I just didn't like it. I loved digital marketing, loved the internet. And I was a lot into Instagram till someone told me, you know, yeah, Instagram is perfect. You're doing a great job about brand awareness, but we need something more with more sales. And so I was like, how to drive sales on Facebook? And I remember one of your blogs regarding Facebook conversion campaigns and e-commerce came out. Like, okay, man, this guy has a lot of articles. So I started reading, getting a hang of it, and I just loved it. I've always wanted to ask you this specific question, which is like, how were you able so long ago that wasn't a big thing to identify or to clarify that for you Facebook ads was going to be a big thing? Like, what was that, you know, the turning point, the trigger point that told you, yes, Facebook is going to make it big?
Yeah. So to be clear, I had zero confidence in starting a business when this all came about. Had no experience in starting a business. I really wasn't, high management or anything in any of the jobs I had. So I just basically started writing is what happened. I mean, it wasn't a matter of like paralyzing myself, thinking about what it is I need to create a business around. I just started writing. And it initially was kind of inconsistent, but I would have runs that, and it would be difficult to stay motivated too, because you would write and no one would read it. But then I would hit something that it just went viral for whatever reason. And it's usually because I had some close friends who shared it, and eventually it hit somebody who shared it too. And that's when I started noticing, okay, well, this is what's really getting attention. Initially, it wasn't even Facebook ads. Mm-hmm. Initially it was Facebook. It was like privacy settings and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So initially it's like, okay, I need to be writing about Facebook. and it was actually in April of 2012. I think it was April, March, April, somewhere in there, when Facebook timeline for pages was released. Mm-hmm. And I wrote like 30 blog posts about all these things that related to that update. And it was really kind of then that I realized that, okay, this is how it can help people. This is how it can help businesses. So people might actually pay me. And this is something that people are actually interested in, and I'm getting some traction on. So yeah, like I said, it really wasn't until about 6 months in, but it took a lot of experimentation of writing to kind of get a sense, not only for what I was passionate about, what I had enough information about to create content around, how it could help people, but it also has to be something where you can make money too. And and even then, you know, that started evolving more and more. It's like, well, it can't be just Facebook marketing, because a lot of these people are trying to do this all for free. So why would they pay me? So, okay, now we get, so it really was an evolution over about a year or so of realizing, okay, it's gotta be Facebook ads, because they're paying for it. And during that time, I'm starting to get more and more educated on ads as well, and getting more experience with it. And that's kind of the way it evolved.
And this is a lot similar to what we try to do in the group, you know, like get something that were interesting to people that were actually spending money on. So they had clients for Instagram, for Facebook, for LinkedIn, for Google AdWords and whatever, and try to just to help them with free content. So leveraging, would you recommend anyone that tries or wants to position himself right now in this industry to start with the free model, basically as you did, and start just delivering value to anyone? Would you say that was the differentiating factor that brought you to success?
Well, I don't know if it's differentiating, but I think it's a huge part of growing a base. Mm-hmm. So not everyone's going to buy from you, but that doesn't mean that everyone, that they won't eventually buy from you, or they could still have a purpose for you. So they might read it, really love it. They'll never buy anything from you, but they're going to share it with someone who will buy from you. I think the mistake that, at least I see it as a mistake that I see from a lot of marketers these days, is it's all entirely sales focused, that all their value is put behind a paywall, where there's no time to get to know whether or not you trust this person and whether or not you eventually should buy from them. It's all, buy from me now. If you don't get it, forget about you, you know? And I found that, first of all, the content creation side of it, the email list building side of it. I mean, Facebook for me is really third in line of like most important things in my marketing. If it wasn't for the traffic that I was getting and the email list side of it, the business never would have taken off. So I think creating all that content was really useful too, just in terms of sharpening myself too, in terms of what's important. And you have to research in order to write articles and know what you're talking about. And that free side of it was critical for me. Now, it doesn't mean it's going to be necessary for everybody, but I'm also not a hard salesperson. So I'm not a big fan of like constantly sell. So it also was a good fit for me in that way too. It's like that you don't have to buy something from me, that you can get some free stuff as well.
Mm-hmm. And eventually if people, they see that you're valuable and they want to know more, they'll just reach out. Yeah. Hey man, how can I book? How much does an hour cost with you? How much does a campaign cost to have you run it or whatever? But one thing that I'm curious personally is that how much budget did you have to waste, so to say, before you actually starting having a real sized business in terms of building this website, creating the content, trying out the campaigns? Would you be able to give an estimate?
I wrote an article. It's really kind of funny reading it now. About a year after everything started, it's called something like, if you're to search it, what it costs to run an online business. And I was somewhat proud of it at the time. Looking back, it's kind of funny, but I was spending an insanely low amount of money on everything, whether it be website hosting, development on the site. I mean, I was doing everything myself. Ads, I was spending so little. Now, you could get away with spending little and getting something out of it back then too. But understand, I'm the sole breadwinner of the family. So when I lost my job, it's not like, okay, let's spend $1,000 a day or something from building this business. I was spending $1 a day on Facebook ads. And so basically that article, the amount I spent total over the year for this business was like $2,500 for a year. Okay. So understanding that's 8 years ago. And it wouldn't be so easy, and the competition was low and everything, and organic reach and all that stuff. But my point is, like, if you were to do it today, I wouldn't look at it as like a minimum that you need to spend. You've just, you know, whatever you're comfortable doing. Yes, you have to set aside maybe some quote unquote waste for experimentation. But end of the day, it's a matter of, if I'm not running these ads, these people aren't coming to my website.
Yeah.
These people aren't opting in to my email list, that kind of thing. So it's, do you want to, you know, increase the amount of people visiting your site by 100 per day, 1,000 per day? I mean, that's ultimately like what you got to look at in terms of how much you're going to spend. For me, it was just a matter of getting the machine going, because without all these efforts happening, I could publish something and no one would go. And so you've got to give it a little bit of a push. So that's all it is. It's like, how much of a push do you want to give it?
Build the traction. Of course, 8 years ago, it, like, as you said, like, organic reach, lower competition, everything, you don't need to spend a lot of money, or actually now you need to spend a lot more. But and actually, in terms of time, how much time did you focus on that?
I wrote on average in that first year more than one blog post per day. For that first year. And actually I think I wrote somewhere in the neighborhood of 600 or so blog posts during those first 2 years. Keeping in mind that's easy for me. It's really pretty easy for me to just spit out a blog post. Like I can write a blog post, depending on how technical it gets, and publish it and promote it and everything within an hour or 2 hours in a lot of cases. But it's all a matter of what's easy for you. And honestly, that's been one of the driving factors for me for the entire business. It's like, I don't want to get bogged down in details and trying to make it look as professional and perfect as possible and everything. It's like, what can you do as easily as possible while providing lots of value? So like doing a webinar, for example, like I don't have to prepare a bunch of professionally made videos and all, you know, these modules and whatnot. We can have this 1 hour, you know, webinar or trainings are done, you know, same way, where they're live. So I would say that, you know, for everybody else, is like, don't get bogged down in those details, especially in the early going. Like, just create something. And that's honestly, for me, I think what was most valuable is that, and when I would get kind of frustrated, it's when I was like in that constant plan mode and like unsure of what I need to do, as opposed to, and like unsure that people are going to buy it or to opt in or whatever. And like my first product ever was like, I hadn't even created it yet. It was like, I think I'm going to do this. I sent out an email to my list of like, it was like 5 or 10,000 people at the time. So this is the first time I even sold anything. Everything was all free at that point. I think I'm going to do this. It's going to cost, I can't even remember what the price was. Here's a PayPal button, pay for it, and you'll be the first one to get it, kind of thing. And that was it. I hadn't created anything yet. And then people started buying it. So I was like, good. Now I know that I'm not going to be wasting my time. So
After how many blogs did you start selling something?
Oh, geez. It was about 10 months. 10 months after I started that I sold something. So until then, the only revenue I made was some, client work.
Mm-hmm.
I was not making much online, especially, but I wasn't even trying to at that point, which looking back wasn't necessarily a bad thing. Biggest regret, I think, was I wish I would have started the email list immediately. I didn't know what I was doing. So I was getting a ton of traffic during the first 3 months from a couple of sort of viral posts, but I was doing nothing with it. Like, they weren't subscribing to anything. So I created an ebook about 3 months in or so, and then started building my email list. But yeah, it's been a crazy ride.
And but the thing is, I'm really happy that you're sharing this, because that's what we've been trying to tell to the members of the group. You know, that there are people that say, okay, I've done 3 posts, I didn't get any money back. And I'm like, that's not going to happen. Like, I started this group after 2 years of helping people, not commenting on every single post on other groups before people are talking about Instagram. And after that, I decided to start the group. But for 2 years, it was just, commenting on people that weren't paying me, but I was just trying to position myself. And that's exactly, what you did 8 years ago. And you started selling after 10 months of writing more than one blog a day. And Of course you love, as you said, you love the writing the blog, but there might be people that love doing podcasts or recording videos or doing all of that, doing the webinars. The thing is that if you love doing that type of content creation, that type of content marketing, what's the content that you like to create, you should build it massively, you should just put it out there, and eventually something is going to go viral. And in terms of viral, what was the, probably the blog that you are more ahead, like that gave you the best results?
They gave me the best results, or
you're most proud of, in terms of views or whatever, engagement. Is there one single piece that you say that's it, or would you just be not able to identify it? I just say, okay, there are quite many.
I can't identify. I mean, I used to do this wasn't even a blog post. I used to do infographic. It was all about the image sizes for Facebook stuff, and that was kind of a magnet for a long time, where I wasn't even getting email addresses for it or anything, but I would update it every year. Initially I was doing it myself, and then I actually had an actual designer create it, and that was usually the way people were finding me. I think the type of content I was always proudest of was where there was more opinion, whereas more of a rant. Like, I used to write a lot of rants about.
Yeah, love them.
Yeah.
Love your rants.
And I think that's where I'm most comfortable, as opposed to technical writing. And I do a lot of technical stuff too. Yeah. But something probably would be something about people freaking out regarding organic reach, or it could be there's a post I wrote about how it's a very generic Facebook made a change and marketers are going to ruin it or something like that. And I think it's that kind of stuff that usually struck a chord with people, and I felt proud of stuff.
And I love, I used, like, actually lately, I don't know if it's just a few days ago or last week, the blog about putting the polls on the Facebook videos, which was really helpful. I needed it. I haven't tested it yet, but I actually needed it. Now, to go a little bit more into some technical stuff, but what do you think are the main mistakes that people make on Facebook, whether it is just Facebook marketing, whether it is organic, so page management, or for example, Facebook ads, what you see? Because I've noticed that lately a lot of bad practices, or a lot of, not great managers are going around, a lot of campaigns set up like weirdly, that what I've been able to see. But what do you think are the main mistakes, top one, 2-3 mistakes you're seeing in either strategically or technically from the Facebook managers?
I would say, and this could be organic or paid, one mistake that we're making is talking to people differently in a post than they're used to. Yeah. So for example, like they're used to a conversational tone. They're used to a certain way their friends are speaking to them. And then we post something where it's all about, it's really slimy and deceptive and tricks and all this kind of stuff, clickbait and all, trying to get them to notice this and click that. And you might get certain clicks because you did use that trick, but is it the right people? I think we kind of forget about building trust and being honest and straightforward and helping people. And we're more worried about the mental gymnastics and like trying to convince people to click on something and worry about the numbers and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And when a typical user posts to Facebook, they're not worried about the numbers. They're not worried about how many people are going to see it or how many people are going to click on it. So I think there's too many shortcuts. Like, oh, the numbers say that if we use these words, people are going to click on it. So we treat users, treat people as robots, as like people who don't really have, their own feelings. It's like, if you use these words and if it's this long or this short, or you use emojis and all this kind of stuff. And like, I feel like we put in too much thought into all that as opposed to like just trying to be helpful and providing value to people. It's all about convincing and deceiving. And I guess that's also coming from a person who's not a big fan of a lot of sales tactics, but.
No, but I agree. I agree completely with you. I mean, and I've seen it also. If you test on the campaigns, like you're going to see the different results. Like if you actually talk to people, people don't realize that social media is not anymore that kind of trend, that kind of thing that you don't know exactly what it is. Right now, social media is part of culture. Like people are used to talk to people on social media. Like you communicate with people, friends, family, relatives, whoever they are, you talk to them on Facebook and you talk to them as if they were, as if you were in real life. And if the same applies on the ads are going to be much more relatable. Like the click here now, it's going to work for those kind of, you know, for a specific type of target, a specific type of product. But if you're looking for the long lasting relationship with your customer, if you're looking to convert someone and aim for the highest lifetime value rather than the short time ROAS, that's not going to work. You know, I mean, that you need to build that kind of relationship. And I think people are just trying to, you know, to prove to the client that in 30 days you can give them the best ROAS they've ever seen. And then they don't realize that, yes, okay, you're going to build the ROAS in 30 days, but you might kill your older customer base that actually was buying every 4 to 6 weeks just because you needed to bump the sales. And that's what's kind of ruining Facebook. But do you think, I mean, I want to hear your opinion on this. Do you think Facebook is actually understanding that now and trying to block those type of tricks, those type of gimmicks?
I mean, they've been trying to block a lot of that stuff for a while now. I think going back again to that blog post about how Facebook Marcus Raw was ruining it. Once we noticed that, for example, using an image, a big image instead of a link, gets more organic reach. Everything from a marketer was this big image with an ugly link in it, even though users never did that. And then Facebook would respond to that and say, okay, well, this can't keep getting the most reach because you guys just ruined this. Or when it was just text, it's like, oh, we're just going to do text now, which is like the ugliest thing in the world because that gets more reach. And Facebook knocked that too. And then it was the clickbait and it was, you know, all these things. So Facebook does try. There'll be like, the deceptive practices with images that looked like there was a play button, but it wasn't actually a video, things like that. Marketers ruined all that stuff. So Facebook had to keep, you know, down ranking it or removing it entirely or whatever. It's tough to keep up with the sliminess of marketers. This is the reality, but so I don't think they're going to get rid of it entirely. No, I think it's just always going to be that way.
You can, I mean, yeah, Facebook optimizes and then marketers adapt and then Facebook optimizes and marketers adapt. We do ruin everything, actually. Yeah. It's usually that's the thing. And it's funny to me what happens on LinkedIn, and every now and then LinkedIn manages to, you know, get rid of the gimmicks and organic reach starts growing again, and people jump back on LinkedIn and they ruin it again, and then they go back on Facebook and they keep going back and forth like this. But it's crazy. But in if someone were to start right now, so let's say we have some like a clean slate, like they don't know any gimmicks, they don't know anything. What would you tell them, like the three top things to do, whether it might be read a book, test, or whatever, like not necessarily technical, for someone to start building some reputation, some experience on Facebook marketing?
I mean, so should it be on Facebook, or does it matter if it's Facebook or not?
Whatever you think it's best.
Yeah, I mean, I think we start with something you own. So I think absolutely, you know, build a website, start an email list is the first thing, whether, you know, kind of go from there. But no matter what, and then decide, you know, whether it's Facebook that is where you're comfortable and that type of audience, or are you more comfortable taking pictures and doing Instagram or... I mean, it could be a lot of different Twitter. It could be a lot of different platforms. But I wouldn't say that you've got to spend, say, most of your time on Facebook. I mean, sure, create a Facebook page. Doesn't mean that's where you're going to be spending most of your time. I think it's really a matter of experimenting over the coming weeks and months with how do I like creating content? How am I most effective creating content? Cover a lot of different topics, figuring out what topics you're most comfortable writing about and get excited about or passionate about, and you can help people, and this, the kind of stuff that people actually respond to, because it's all kind of a one big experiment to figure out what it is that's going to strike a chord and could lead to a business for you. I mean, I think it's risky to say, I'm going to do this, and this is exactly how I'm going to do it. I've got no results to back it up. And this is going to be my product, and it's going to work, and then going out with it. I think the biggest part of this is just experimentation and creating things without worrying too much about it being perfect. So it could be video. I think video is a big one. Like I've always wished I was more comfortable with video. Mm-hmm. Cause I know that would be a really good way to get out, these days, but, yeah, you just figure out what works for you.
And focus on that. That's perfect. The people sometimes focus too much on what worked for other people, and they try to replicate or to be a copycat, when actually, you know, if I don't know, whatever you like, if you're comfortable, like with clean, like just with words, like own your words, sort of thing. Like if you want to talk in a way, just do it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't mean that because some person you actually like is talking that way, you need to speak that way. So that's one thing that I've never understood. I love doing the live. So I try to go live as much as possible. And I'm probably at live 100 or 200 and something. And I don't just, you know, awesome. Sometimes you fuck up, like we said earlier, and you just own it and you keep going and you're just comfortable with it. It's the attitude, and not all the videos are going to work. Not all the blogs are going to work and everything. Everyone started with zero viewers and zero followers. So as long as we realize that, it's going to be much easier for everyone actually to.
And if you're comfortable with a live, it's pretty easy, right? So like with writing, don't feel like you have to be a writer. If you're not a writer, If you're not comfortable writing, if you're going to make lots of typos and whatever, if it takes you a day to write a blog post, you probably shouldn't be writing blog posts. So, or maybe make that just a small part of your routine and focus on video or something else. So yeah, it's, like you were saying, don't feel like you have to do what everyone else is doing. I mean, it's got to be come around whatever it is your strengths are.
Absolutely. And to that part, like I know I try to push everyone to just create, you know, you do your thing, you start, you build the small user base and then you grow. But if you were to go back 8 years and you could give like one tip to John Loomer 8 years ago, what would you tell him?
8 years ago, I'd say start your email list now and create a product as soon as you can. And just, you know, don't worry about it. I think I spent way too much time in the early days worrying. And like, there's reason to worry, but I was paralyzed by the worry a little bit in the early going because I didn't have a job and I thought I was supposed to get a job and I wasn't making money and a lot of pressure. But I think those two things would be the main thing. Because it look, 10 months to create a product is too long.
It's fit, yeah.
Should you, I mean, if no one buys it, no one, and even if you make it as a, and like make it as like a prepay kind of thing, which is ultimately what I did 10 months later, like just do something, just because it's experience either way. Like, experience creating a product, experience, creating the buyer, you know, seeing what the buyer user experience is buying something and how, like, I don't know. I didn't know how to set up all the technical side of it. So just going through setting that up, the more experience you can give yourself doing those things in the early going, the better.
And where do you see like those, I mean, I know, especially in the US right now, it's coming to Italy as well, to Europe as well, subscription models for, you know, for info products or for whatever type of businesses, even, you know, consumables and all of that. It's becoming a main, it's becoming a big thing. Yeah. I'd love to hear your take on it, your opinion for how that's going to develop in the next, you know, 6, 12, 18, 24 months.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I don't have a crystal ball, but, and that's one thing I would tell myself 8 years ago, and maybe not 8 years ago, but much sooner, is that you, instead of creating these one-off products for something that's going to be irrelevant 3 months later, you need to create a subscription product. And so, I mean, luckily I've been doing it. I had my Power Hitters Club weekly webinar episode number 276 yesterday. So that's 276 weekly. So I do the math on that. I mean, so we're talking about over 5 years of that. So I waited 3 years to do that, which maybe isn't a ton of time, but I was creating a lot of one-off. So basically what was happening was I'd launch a new product. Revenue would spike, would be awesome. I didn't want to promote it constantly. I didn't want to be in this constant promotion, you know, per product. Like, I was also putting out new content all the time. So those sales would go down, and then eventually that product would become irrelevant after like 3 months or so, because Facebook changes all the time. And then I'd have to create a new product. So I was always these peaks and valleys of revenue, having to put in a whole bunch of effort creating a new product, and everything that goes behind that, as opposed to monthly recurring revenue, which has really saved me in so many ways. And it's just, it's easier. And it's actually focusing on a lot of the live stuff, like what you're doing right now, doing live trainings, live weekly webinars, you know. We got a community that people kind of manage themselves. And so that's one thing I wish I would have done sooner. And I think it's kind of critical for a business in terms of having predictable revenue too, because otherwise you're in the constant create mode, which is very difficult to sustain, and you're going to burn yourself out, is kind of what I was seeing, especially when the subject matter is something like Facebook. That is constantly changing. Because otherwise, yeah, sure, you could create a product for many other industries that is going to be evergreen, and you can just keep selling it and sell it forever. But I think it's got to be subscription based when we're talking about a subject like this. It's tough to keep up with creating more and more relevant products. They're just going to no longer be, you can't sell it anymore after a few months.
No, and that's that they become obsolete too yeah. fast. And I've seen that's also the problem with I call it academic training. So basically, in colleges in the US are trying to keep up, in Italy as well, but they are failing badly. But I know a few people are doing some digital marketing courses in the US, and also that's like by the time the book is published and the course is approved and it gets out there and you are in class and you learn about it, it's gonna be too late. It's gonna be obsolete already. And the same happens by the time you do your Facebook ad, whatever course, unless you're going to update it, unless you're going to improve it on a weekly, monthly, quarterly basis, that's always going to become obsolete. And the power of the community, the power of Facebook, and in this case also the power of some subscription models, is that you can also keep it up. You can always keep it up to date, but people sometimes and that's not of course your case, because I've seen seeing all the content, people think that once you've got them in that subscription model, you're just in forever. I don't care about retainer. They've paid once. You're going to pay forever. I'm not going to have to do anything anymore. But I do guess that you keep working a lot on the subscription, like on the people that are paying the Power Hitters Club, whether it's basic or elite. It's still going to be there in terms of delivery. You're just not focusing on selling on the sales cycle anymore. You're just focusing on retaining people.
It's retaining, but it's a lot of, for me, it's live training, which makes it much, much easier. So the one issue I found with creating those pre-prepared training courses was that once someone bought it, they had this expectation that you're going to update it, which I thought was crazy. Like I would get an email from, and every once in a while, I still get one. I bought this from you 6 years ago and it's completely obsolete. When are you going to update it? If you expect me to update something that you paid for 6 years ago, then, and you're not paying for it on an ongoing basis, then you're basically getting free subscription month after month after month for me to update it, which is insane. So I think that, first of all, anyone who creates a one-off training, do not promise that you're going to update it. Actually say you're not going to update it. But the nice thing about the subscription portion of it is like you have access to all these prior trainings and prior webinars I did, but it's all live stuff. So there's no expectation that, oh, this changed, so it's going to be updated. It's like, okay, well, we got this other recent training or this other recent webinar to keep you updated on what's actually going on. So, but again, it's a matter of, okay, what's an easy way to keep people educated, to keep people informed? It's these weekly things that I've just made it part of a routine, and there's like a template that I use to do it, and it's worked for me.
That's great. And I think everyone could leverage it. So I don't know if anyone from the audience that's watching right now has one last question. I'll just cut with a couple of seconds, because then we'll end the interview. But in the meantime, I'm just curious about one thing. What's in your opinion, what's to you the craziest campaign or the craziest product you've run on Facebook ads?
I always like to do something that I like, use tools in ways that weren't intended.
Okay.
So there's this experiment that I ran, I guess it was 3 years ago, was to leverage website custom audiences in a way to make ads a subscription. So what that means is, it might have even been an organic post, and I turned it into an ad. It's like, I'm doing this experiment. If you want to see the ads in this experiment, click this link. So you'll be added to this website custom audience. And once they're added to that, I started creating new content. So basically they're seeing exclusive content. So I package it as exclusive content that they can't see on my site anywhere else if they're subscribed to this. And it's only surfaced via ads. So basically what happened was people were excited to see my ads and they were mad if they weren't seeing a particular ad that they thought they were supposed to be seeing now. So one of the challenges became, how do I get it so everybody can see it? Which is kind of impossible, but you do everything you can. So the engagement on those ads was so ridiculous. I mean, like nothing you would ever see because people wanted to see them. And they also knew if they wanted to keep seeing them, they had to keep clicking on them. And then, of course, the final ad was, okay, we're at the end of this. If you want to see how I did it, sign. And I think it was just a free webinar at that time. So sign up for this free webinar. And the percentage, so basically there were like 1,000 people who were still in that campaign. So it was a really cool experiment too, to see other people who clicked at the very beginning, how many were still left at the end. It was a pretty high percentage, but it was 1,000 people, 800 of those people signed up for the webinar. So 800 people registered for this webinar. And then of course at the end that, you know, I sold training and stuff like that at that.
Of course.
But it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of work, but it was fun seeing people respond to these ads in ways that just wasn't normal at all.
No. And that's the kind of, I call it like not gamification, but basically you're giving them value just by consuming the ad. People don't like to consume ads, but if you're able to do it, then it's great. And I've tried something similar with the custom audiences on videos. So I took a big video, and like a 20 minutes.
Yeah. And I did this before there was that option, but I think video would be a great option to be.
You know, if you watch 95% or more and you say, hey guys, if you watch until the end in the next 48 hours, you're going to see the next episode. And basically you keep doing it. You have a lot of drop off on the one first and the second, but then retention from number 3 to number 10, it's basically 95%. And you're just providing value. And at the end, they have a frequency of 10 in the last 3 months, in the last 30 days. And they actually loved that type of content. Those people are the most valuable and you can actually convert them. I love this using the tools in the way you're not supposed to.
Yeah. It all started from, like, I remember when that came to me is like, it's near the end of the year where you're always like, thinking about, okay, what am I going to do next year? And I was just thinking to myself as I was trying to get to sleep, couldn't get to sleep, like, how can you create an ad that people don't hate, that people actually want to see? And that's how all that came together. So it's a matter of, like, you know, challenge yourself and look at, so why are things the way they currently are, and how can we change it? How can we do something different?
That's absolutely right. We have one last question. That's the perfect question to close the interview. Tommaso, which is our podcast guy, it's amazing at podcasting and any type of service like that, saying, I have one question. It's more related to your life. What's the thing that makes you happy by doing this job? What do you see in people when you help them?
Oh, geez. Yeah. I mean, that positive feedback, I feel like, is really, really important. Knowing that someone else may have been in that same place I was when my business started, and because of, you know, could have been free stuff they read on the website or whatever, they were given some confidence to start their own business or to turn things around. So any of those emails that I received is just awesome. Like when I would go speak at conferences and I would hear from people, I mean, that's ultimately what made all this worthwhile. I mean, it's not about all the other stuff in the end. It's like, were you able to make a positive difference? And then for me personally, I mean, the main reason I do what I do is to spend more time with my family. And so, you know, obviously I spent a lot of time writing blog posts in those first couple of years, but ultimately my dream was to make my life more flexible. So especially these last 4 or so years, I mean, my business is almost secondary at this. It really is secondary at this point. My primary job is really as a a baseball coach where I don't get paid. So I spent a lot of time with my kids. I spent a lot of time coaching. And so I guess my advice to people along those lines is to kind of keep in mind what your big why is. You know, why is it you're doing these things? Don't feel like it's got to be about growing and revenue, and every year it's got to be bigger and better. We're not growing anymore. The business isn't growing anymore. I just want to keep it stable so I can spend more time with my family. Because that's ultimately what matters to me. But you have to decide what's important to you as well.
Thank you so much for sharing this with the audience. It's I think it's really important to see someone that's at the level where a lot of people that might be in the audience is saying that, you know, you don't need to scale to the moon. You need to scale to the point where you're comfortable with. And if you want to be the baseball dad, you have all the rights to do it. And as long as it makes you happy. And thank you so much, John, for taking this interview and closing in such a, you know, a powerful, really powerful way. It's been a real honor to have you in our community. I hope that a lot of people in the group that might have not known you, check out the link to the blog. There are a lot of cool things that sometimes I also use, you know, to do a walkthrough on how to put the poll on the videos and all of that, that you can get straight from the source, which you sometimes is John. And again, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Enrico. Thank you, everybody.
See ya.
Bye-bye.